Hello, and welcome to the Reggie's House podcast. My name is Mike Swanson, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Andrew Roman. Andrew, how are you?
Good, man. How are you doing?
Honestly, dude, not too bad. This is one of those, like, before Thanksgiving break kind of deals. And so, I'm going to be honest with you, I'm pretty gassed this week. Penn State started a week earlier than they normally do for the semester, and so my kind of natural body rhythm, which has been kind of tempered over the past 5 years, is telling me that, hey, this is Thanksgiving week and you should have this off. But at the end of the day, I do not. So I'm just kind of slogging through this week trying to, just kind of trying to finish strong. So
I can certainly relate to that. I feel like, even in my job, it's like just kind of, I don't get holidays. I don't get extended holidays, in the same way that an academic calendar works. But, just feeling like, yeah, it's time for a little break. Looking forward to a couple of days off. So,
yeah. And what's exciting, and this is some big news for maybe our repeat listeners. For those of you who don't actually know, so Andrew and I don't actually live in the same city, which means that when we record these podcasts, we have this very elaborate setup of phone calls and microphones to actually record this. And so for the first time ever, the Reggie's House podcast will be recorded in the same room next week. Which means that we get to hang out and actually talk. So
it's probably just going to go way far off the rails.
Well, and that's fine. You know what? I think we have a group of friends who are just delightful humans, but when we get to talking hockey, it usually goes way off the rails. So I'm thinking maybe we can dream up a segment where we just pull them in and just start shooting the breeze and seeing what happens. Because truth be told, they're wonderful.
Yes.
So I know we haven't talked about that, but I figured, maybe with everybody in the same room, we can just see what kind of an absolute just pigsty we can make of this podcast next week.
That sounds just excellent. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Good. Well, and for you listening to this podcast, you should be looking forward to it as well, or maybe skip next week. It depends on how you feel about it. But it's not next week yet. It's still this week. And so another week comes and goes. Pretty slow week for the Pens, all told, and like big time off between games. And so what do we got to talk about, Andrew?
Well, I think kind of, one of the leading pieces of Pens news anyway is this new rumor, another week, another right-handed defenseman that's young and promising being linked to the Penguins in terms of trades. This time we're looking at Dougie Hamilton from Calgary. Nick Kypreos, who, former player, who's, I think his biggest claim to fame was just being a part of the 1994 Rangers team. I feel like he was just a total like fourth line grinder type, like didn't put up a lot of points or whatever, but like his stories about Mark Messier and the summer of 94 are like the stuff of legends.
Right.
And so somehow he managed to like parlay that into a career working for, I honestly don't know who he works for now. I don't know if it's Sportsnet or if it's TSN or who it is.
Sportsnet.
I think it is Sportsnet because I've seen him on Sportsnet pods.
dude's legit. I mean,
oh, he is.
I honestly like he's one of the old timey guys, but like he doesn't talk like an old timey guy. He doesn't talk about the glory of the 80s and in the 90s like it was like, like he's so much better than, everybody else. He just seems real down to earth, I'm gonna be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I actually, I value his kind of look at the sport. I don't know that he's necessarily a, leader in terms of advanced stats thinking, things of that nature, but I don't think he's necessarily asked to be. But I think he offers a pretty honest assessment of where, where a player is, where a team is, anytime he chooses to speak up.
Yeah. So what are we looking at with this? So we've got Hamilton is $5.5 million a year guy.
Yeah. I think he makes 5.75 actually, okay. Last I checked.
So just under six. He's 23. Started his career started his career in Boston, and then in typical Boston fashion, they said, this guy's pretty good. Why don't we trade him?
Better trade him.
Just pause and just admire how many ridiculously good young players the Boston Bruins have traded away over the past 6 years.
Yeah, it's gosh, it like it boggles the brain. You know, I mean, you look at Phil Kessel, you know, and I think the craziest thing about that trade, and I'm not saying it didn't work out to a certain extent, although we'll get into that in a moment. but you know, but the thing is that like they traded their best scorer, and like, you know, and at twice. That point, because I don't even think at that point, like, you could have really said that like Patrice Bergeron was the Patrice Bergeron that we know and love today.
Sure.
You know, when they made that move back then. But so, you know, they trade their best scorer to a division rival with Toronto, but then Toronto was horrible anyway, and they gave up a non-lottery protected first round pick, which turned out to be the number two pick in the draft, which they used to then take Tyler Seguin. And then, you know, 3 years later, Seguin gets in trouble like one time. I don't even think he actually got in trouble. He just was like viewed as being too much of a partier or something like that. And so then off he goes to Dallas, and like, I believe it was that, I don't know if it was Sagan's same draft class or not, but that it was really close to, that was the time when Hamilton was drafted as well. It might've been a year later. Cause I think Sagan, it was
a year later because yeah. Sagan's a little bit older than 23, but
yeah,
I just don't understand how you give away that many goals. Like, that's a lot of goals to give away. And even the guy that they got back in Louis Eriksson, like, finally puts up 30 goals. And so what do?
Well,
they let him walk, not even trade him. Just let him walk. Well,
exactly. They needed to trade him at the deadline last year. I mean,
if you're Don Sweeney, how do you not trade him? I mean, like, there's plenty of teams that could have used, you know, a 25 or a 30 goal guy, you know, coming in. You look at like somebody like, I feel like the Islanders would have ponied up somebody for him, or,
oh, absolutely.
You know, if Tampa Bay does something foolish, like, well, I mean, I don't know that Stevie Y is going to do that, but somebody could have bought a 30 goal rental at the deadline last year.
And like, I mean, I think there's something to be said for, and arguably the Penguins kind of got caught looking at this a couple times as well. I mean, in terms of the last several years when they lost all of their defensemen, their Brooks Orpiks and Matt Niskanens and Paul Martins, etc. Like, yes, keep the guy if you think you can win the Stanley Cup, but like, there was no way that if you're Don Sweeney looking at that team last year that you're saying, yes, this team is my team. I'm getting my name on the cup with these guys. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Well, no matter the case, Dougie Hamilton is not a Boston Bruin. He is a Calgary Flame.
Yes.
And he is a pretty good Calgary Flame.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he, you know, tends to do all of the things that you want to see from a defenseman in this day and age. He typically drives possession, you know, has good kind of first pass instincts, good skater, you know, does a lot with, you know, kind of with the opportunity that he's afforded in terms of setting up goals. You know, I think his assists are pretty strong. I don't know if he's ever developed that necessarily, like, just pound the puck kind of mentality on the power play, and that's a little bit tough in a place like Calgary, just because they have a lot. I mean, you know, Mark Giordano and TJ Brody are probably both on the depth chart, certainly well ahead of Hamilton. So, you know, but certainly he's definitely a good player, and that's why he gets paid what he gets paid, and why Calgary gave up a first round pick to acquire him.
Yeah, well, I'm looking for, if you hear me clicking around, it's like, because I'm looking for, there was an article, I think it was Penn's Nation, can't be sure, but that they had a mock-up of some different stuff that I want to find. But I mean, Dougie Hamilton looks good. I mean, he is not Chris Letang.
No.
But he's pretty freaking close, and that's what I'm looking for. They had a where is it? Crap, I can't find it to save my life. But there was one of the points, something I was reading, and maybe we can link it later, but essentially what the writer was saying is that, like, one of the things that makes the Pens so hard to play against is that even if you shut down one of the superstars on their team, there's usually a backup for that. So, like, if Sidney Crosby doesn't show up or is hurt, you have Evgeny Malkin, and vice versa, right? if Marc-Andre Fleury isn't playing, you've got Matt Murray and vice versa. But arguably, and I think that this is, I would love to hear your thoughts on this, arguably the most irreplaceable Penguin at this point is Chris Letang. And the in terms of like the way that Mike Sullivan has been using the defenseman, the only other, the next guy up on that depth chart is probably Brian Dumoulin in terms of ice time and how he's being used. Brian Dumoulin does not come close to replacing Chris Letang. And that's no knock on Brian Dumoulin. It's just simply that he is not Chris Letang. And so there, I guess the argument was, okay, well, what would it look like for the Pens to go out and find somebody who can be not necessarily Chris Letang, but a suitable replacement for Chris Letang as, you know, as like, as he drops off or if he gets hurt or is, you know, suspended or, you know, whatever the case is. And honestly, one of the things that caught my eye so much is that Dougie Hamilton nearly mirrors all of Chris Letang's stats, but just not to the extent that Chris Letang is Chris Letang. And so I could see why the Pens would want to go out and do this. I don't think it's coming out of left field because I know, I mean, Mike Sullivan hasn't been, you know, wildly impressed with the play of Olimata. And I mean, to be fair, like, I don't think he should be, but, if you can get, if you're Calgary, is it worth flipping somebody like Hamilton for Mata in, you know, some picks or something? I don't know, but I think that there is something to be said for that mentality of like finding, you know, Chris Letang Jr. or whatever, which, and at the end of the day, Dougie Hamilton's still only 23 years old.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's very, very young. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think, you know, arguably the weak area for the Penguins, and this isn't even necessarily like a who can step up in Letang's absence kind of thing, but it is a question of the Pens just don't really have, like, their right shot defenseman depth is not all that good. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, on the NHL roster, they only carry two of them, actually, with, sure. with Trevor Daley playing on the right side on the second pairing. You know, and Justin Schultz is, you know, he does his thing, but I don't think he's not a substitute in terms of the defensive prowess anyway for Letang. And even at that, I don't know if Schultz is really the offensive player that Letang is either.
No.
You know, and that's where a player like Hamilton comes in. And I think that's why, you know, I think we both are very interested and we've talked on previous episodes about Jacob Trouba as well. You know, I think if there's a legitimate opportunity to go out and turn, you know, particularly a player such as Olimata, who, you know, he's just not that great fit here in Pittsburgh. I mean, he's just, you know, his skating isn't, I mean, his skating has never really been his strong suit. And the problem is that this team is built on an ability to skate.
Right.
You know, point blank. With that in mind, it's like, well, if we can take this player who, I mean, even at that, I think the other important thing to remember is that, you know, we do have Derek Pouliot in the wings. I mean, he's like getting close to being able to play again. You know, and it's like, you still have that like studly young left-hand shot defenseman way, like that's available, even if you get rid of Olimata.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, it certainly makes sense to look at a trade involving Mata. You know, it's the thing that I maybe don't quite get is that Calgary has stated that they're like what they would be interested in doing is trading from their blue line because they believe it's their deepest position and that presumably they would want to upgrade at other positions. But I don't know. I don't think that makes a lot of sense. But then I guess the question becomes, does that mean that they're not as interested in a player like Olimata as maybe Winnipeg would be if there is any still some semblance of a Trouba trade that's going to happen?
Well, and I think, but if it, like, I mean, to that point, Calgary's issue is not that they can't score goals. I mean, they score goals in bunches. It's that they can't keep it out of the back of their net. And so yeah. you got to think that a guy like Ole Mata can help in that regard. And a team that isn't built on necessarily, like, I mean, the Flames are not going to play the run and gun same style that the Penguins are, which means that, like, Sullivan demands that everybody skates, right? Like, you can't, there's no room for the Rob Scuderis of the world on the Penguins. And not because they're bad players, but because, like, the whole team is constantly moving so much that if you can't skate, it just goes to hell in a handbasket really quickly. I don't know that Calgary plays that way. And so somebody like Ole Mata, who is not a bad skater, but just not as strong compared to the rest of the Penguins group, I think, like, you know, maybe he ends up helping out on a team like that with some of the aging defensemen. Because, again, it's not that they're bad. It's just that, like, they just can't keep the puck out of the back of their net.
Yeah. So that was an interesting thing that I did notice. Like, you know, Calgary, I personally had them pegged as a playoff team personally. And I think you were kind of in a similar boat there, Mike, mm-hmm. just thinking like they have, you know, they have like the extreme talent up front. I mean, they have, you know, Sean Monahan and Sam Bennett and Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau is probably a top 10 talent in the whole league right now.
Yeah.
You know, as well as some okay complimentary pieces, and like their defense looks, I mean, their defense looks impressive. I mean, with Giordano and Brody and Hamilton, as we've mentioned, and, you know, I think even at that, like beyond that, I mean, you know, Dennis Wiedemann, like his kind of discretion last year aside, like is, you know, I would say a decently serviceable defenseman. And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I mean, they got one of the things that I think was interesting was like, so last year, the Flames made the trade of Chris Russell to Dallas. And one of the players that Dallas sent to, the Flames was, Jyrki Jokipaka. And I think a lot of people thought that Jokipaka was a better defenseman than Russell was. And he was considered like an afterthought in the trade.
He's a good defenseman. He's going to be an even better defenseman in about 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, and he's still a young guy as well. I mean, I think he might be 23, 24 in that range. You know, so still certainly a guy with a lot of room to grow. But the interesting, and then the other side of that is that the Flames really did bolster their goaltending situation. I mean, they had really bad goaltending last year, but then this offseason they went out and they got Brian Elliott out of St. Louis, and then they signed Chad Johnson, who's, you know, probably one of the more under the radar solid backups in the league nowadays. But nonetheless, they're dead last in goal differential through this point of the season.
Like, well, but at the same time, I mean, to be fair though, like they haven't, like Brian Elliott has not done anything for them.
No,
like he is not. And I'm just looking up his stats right now. I mean, he's sitting. He's looking at. I mean, this is worse, way worse than I thought it was going to be. I mean, his save percentage is well under 90%. Like, it's. What would you wager his save percentage would be?
Well, I mean, seeing that they are literally worst in the league in goal differential, and they score a decent amount. I'm gonna say like, I don't know, 880 or something like that.
Yeah, it's 882.
Oh wow,
that's not good. Like, that's really, really bad.
Yeah, that's.
I mean, that's middle of the road for the late 1980s.
Yeah,
and that's saying something. But like, I mean, Elliott, he's just not been good at all this year, and no. So you have to wonder if like, are they looking at that and saying like, well, are we gonna blame everything on just Brian Elliott just not playing super well? Well, I mean, maybe. Like, I mean, to be fair, if you're not getting anything north of 900 from your goaltender, either your back end is really terrible, which I don't think is the case for the Flames, or your goaltender has just not been good. And I'm going to go with that one, that he's just been really bad.
Yeah. And I think I saw this when I was kind of doing some research into teams during the offseason, and it was like, I want to say, I don't know what's going on in Calgary, but like, I'm pretty sure last year, like that team finished, I believe, with sub 900 goaltending and like a goals against average over 3.
Oof.
And they had a revolving door of goaltenders last year. They had,
right.
You know, they had like Red Obera and Kari Ramo and Jonas Hiller. And then they got Nick Backstrom, not the skater, but the goalie that you haven't heard of in like 6 years. And I think a few other guys. I mean, they had like six or seven guys, I think, play goaltender for them last year, just last year, and still like couldn't boost that save percentage above, you know, even 900, which is, you know, that means that one in every 10 shots went through, more than one in every 10 shots. Like, that's not good.
That's what I'm looking at right now. I mean, their combined average is about an 886.
Wow.
that's about as bad as it gets. And that's really bad.
Yeah. So I guess then, does that maybe beg the question, do you think that there could be anything? One thing that I think I have noticed about Elliott is I think he's actually a free agent after this season. Let me pull it up here real quick. Yeah, he is. He will be a free agent this year, as will Chad Johnson, actually. I mean, do you think that there's like any chance that a trade involving the Pens and Calgary could actually involve a goaltender? I don't know.
I mean, what is he making right now?
Elliott makes 2.5 and Johnson makes 1.7.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you this. I think I could see a scenario where also what site are you using for cap hit stuff now? Because I feel like every time we land on a site that dude gets hired by some franchise.
Oh, yeah. Lately, I've been frequenting capfriendly.com.
Okay.
It's pretty good. I mean, they definitely, I feel like they've even upped their game in the wake of General Fanager going out. I think, you know, a lot of people kind of migrated to them and maybe threw them a couple bucks and said, hey, like, you know, we want the stuff that was in General Fanager. So they did it.
So I'm looking for our friends in Calgary and I can't seem to find it. Well, okay. So here's my point. What I was getting at was, I could see a situation where, I think the most likely situation at this point, honestly, is that Jim Rutherford just hangs on to both Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray.
Oh, I think he's going to do it until he literally has to, you know, has a gun to his head, basically.
Right. So I think there's that. I think, if he has to make a trade, I think that what he ends up doing is trades. I think he ends up dealing Fleury. I mean, like, at the end of the day, like, if you've got, I mean, and Matt Murray has looked really, really good over his past five games.
I don't know. I think, you know, people in the media are like trying to kind of break out this like goalie controversy kind of thing. And I'm not saying, I mean, you know, I guess it is a controversy just in the sense that it's never easy when, you know, an established veteran and a very good veteran at that, like, gives way to a younger player. But, like, I mean, so far it hasn't been close. I mean,
yeah.
Murray has been phenomenal so far.
So here's what I'm saying. I think I would assume that if there's one goalie headed out of Pittsburgh, it's Marc-Andre Fleury.
Yeah.
And I can see, honestly, judging by how Jim Rutherford just deals with things and like kind of just makes ridiculous trades, I could see something where, and you can tell me what you think of this, what if Chad Johnson and Dougie Hamilton make their way over to the Pens for Fleury and Olli Maatta?
That would be a very, very big trade, but I think that I think I agree with you. I think, you know, we're almost thinking small time if we're thinking like
right. It
would be a one for one type of deal.
Right. Here's my point in that Chad Johnson, like, I think Brian Elliott, who's not a bad goaltender, like, he's not. I mean, I'm looking at his kind of lifetime stuff and he's not a bad goaltender.
No, no, not by any stretch. He was actually originally drafted by the Penguins.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a 913 overall and a 243 goals against average for his lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad goaltender. I mean, that goals against average is pretty low.
Yeah, the goals against particularly. I mean, the save percentage is probably skewed just a little bit because he isn't a full-time starter.
Right. So I think in terms of that, I mean, he's probably closer to – I mean, he is a full-time starter. Like, I mean, as he is – the Flames are treating him like a full-time starter, and I think they should be. Mm-hmm. I would assume that if you were to consider kind of those deals that we've been talking about, the Hamilton for Mata and then maybe something like Fleury for Johnson, those are both lopsided deals.
Yeah.
So, you know, packaging them together with maybe like some draft picks or some minor league players. Because, I mean, don't forget, the Pens are just absolutely stacked with like depth puck movers at the Wilkes-Barre Scranton level, which is something that, you know, I'm looking at. So Derek Engelin is a UFA after this year. Dennis Wideman is a UFA. And I mean, if they move Dougie Hamilton, they're going to need somebody to fill those three gaps. I could see a scenario where you've got, you know, probably about four or five pieces on each side that are moving from the Flames. You know, maybe it's Johnson and Hamilton and some picks. And for the Penguins, it's maybe something along the lines of like Fleury, Mata, and I'm thinking about maybe they throw in like an enticing, you know, young blue liner.
Maybe Stuart Percy or somebody like that.
Yeah, exactly. Who maybe hasn't really panned out but still has that kind of potential. Or I mean, maybe they go big and it ends up being like they throw in like somebody like an Ethan Pro in like a second rounder for like a first rounder from Calgary. Like, I mean, you know, like there could be something. I wouldn't put it past Jim Rutherford to see something like that materialize.
No, certainly not. And I feel like that is, it's almost sounding a little bit like sort of like the trade that like the Kessel trade in and itself. You know, where, you know, essentially there's only like, you know, kind of one really meaningful piece that moved to the Penguins and, you know, and I don't know. I if I were a Toronto fan, I would hate that trade.
Well, and they do, right? Like, yeah. I can remember, like, just like, I have a friend of a friend who's a huge Leafs fan, and he hated it. He was like, this is just the worst, because like, you're not getting anything proven back for Phil Kessel.
Yeah.
And that's just not, I mean, Kasperi Kapanen has yet to really, like, he was the big chip in terms of what was coming back, and he has yet to really cement himself in anything other than like a fringe NHLer.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the sort of basic question, and I hope the best for Kapanen, but sure. It's like, you know, in a year when the Maple Leafs are, I think they're rolling out like six or seven rookies every night, and Kapanen isn't one of them. So. Right.
Well, and also because Brooks Like is playing on the Marlies right now.
Well, yeah.
I think I heard something that they've got about $5 million in cap space on the Marlies right now, which is absolutely insane.
Yeah. I would bet it's even, I mean, just in terms of like actual like NHL, you know, cap tied up. I mean, it's still probably, you know, a pretty big measure. I mean, because they also sent Milan Mikolic down, I believe.
Right, and, right.
I mean, it's like, you know, I know what they were doing. I mean, basically they were saying, because they had cap space last year, and they're like, you know what, we'll take your high cap hit that you want to get rid of in order to get a different piece that we like more.
Right.
You know, I think they took Mikolic in the Phaneuf trade, which, well, created a lot of that cap space, and then and then they took Like in order to get Connor Carrick, who is a young, impressive defenseman out from Washington. So it's, I don't know. I feel like it was a good strategy, and it works if you're the Maple Leafs and you literally have, you know, the NHL's money printing press in your basement.
Right.
So, I mean, that helps, but it's, you know, but it's kind of unfair, I would say, to, you know, if you're a guy like that gets sent to Toronto, and it's just like, man, I this is where my career goes to die now, basically.
Right.
But yeah, but anyway, I mean, I think this, you know, any deal that would come between, you know, Pittsburgh and Calgary, like getting back to this, you know, Hamilton look, you know, I think it would have to actually involve a lot of big moving pieces. And I think what that also tells me is, A, I don't know if it may, if it's that likely in a sense. I mean, it's certainly, you know, Rutherford has never shied away from making those, you know, big multi-piece deals, but I mean, that's still a lot. And I think that's a move that would be best made in the off season. And that might be the kind of thing to just bear in mind is that, yeah, maybe there is some real serious discussion between these two teams right now, but I don't think it's going to come to fruition anytime soon.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like, if they continue to, if Calgary continues to give up as many goals as they are, and that, yeah, that goal differential continues to be like a growing gulf, it might happen sooner than you think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's certainly the possibility, you know, especially again with both of their goalies on expiring contracts. I think that makes it so much easier to trade one of those guys as part of this deal.
Right.
You know, whereas, again, I think the big limitation, like with a team like Dallas, with their goaltending situation is like their goalies' contracts are not expiring and nobody wants to touch those with a, you know, 50-foot pole.
Right. Well, that's because they're both terrible contracts.
Yeah.
So, and I think that also, I mean, really, you look at somebody like Chad Johnson, like, I think it gives you, there's some opportunity there if he's going to be willing to come in and play a backup role. I think the Pens could end up signing him. Like, okay, so suppose that all goes down and Johnson is one of the pieces that's moved. You conceivably can probably hold, like, hang on to him for another year and say, like, hey, we'll give you, you know, like, depending on how, you know, how the postseason goes, we'll give you the identical contract that you're making now, which is $1.7 million a year.
Mm-hmm. And you get to be in just a great situation.
Yeah. And that's if you're, you know, if like Tristan Jarry isn't ready.
Right.
Because I mean, you've still got a lot of depth at the goaltending position, in the minor leagues right now for the Pens. And so, worst case scenario, Jarry isn't ready at the end of the next year to make that full time jump to full time backup in the NHL. Which, I mean, truth be told, like, depending, I mean, he played really well in the preseason. Like, he might be closer to that than anything. But either way, if Johnson's contract is expiring, you've got a really easy way. It's a win-win for both player and club.
Yeah. No, I would agree with that. Certainly. You know, it's, you know, well, once again, it's like, he has a chance to be in a good situation and probably make decent money. I mean, you know, clearly if he's getting paid 1.7 this year, I think he'd be able to get that again next year. You know, and probably play 30 games. And if after that he wants to pursue something else, like, you know, somebody else wants to pay more for his services, you know, good on him.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of flexibility there and it doesn't just involve, Dougie Hamilton. I think that's the end of the story there.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think it'll be something to keep our eye on, like, as things develop, especially with, like, you know, it's funny because at the beginning of the season, we said, hey, there is absolutely zero market for goaltenders. And how many teams right now are just hurting for a goaltender that can hold their own weight? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, it is a shockingly large amount. I mean, I was thinking or figuring that there would be another, you know, kind of Montreal situation, but I wasn't expecting there to be, like, four of them or, like, you know, or in the instance of a team like Calgary where this is what we think is a good lineup that just isn't getting the job done. I mean, at a certain point, it's like, I guess we can't constantly blame the goaltending. I mean, there must be something else going on there, but like a lot of the other indicators have really turned around. I mean, they, you know, Calgary has a new coach this year, Glenn Gulletson. Right. I still don't know anything about him, like literally what his philosophy is at all. But right. I mean, one thing I do know is that they're, you know, their kind of Corsi and possession metrics are a lot more favorable. I mean, I think they've jumped all the way to like the top 10, yet they're still just hemorrhaging goals on a nightly basis.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you're a goaltender. Like, I mean, do you know what they're, I guess I could just pull up the Corsica stats, but I'm interested as to what, the like shot differentials would be for them, because like, I mean, and I'm just looking at this right now. So team, of course, this is going to take forever for me to find out what I'm looking for. But okay. Calgary. Okay, this is what we want. Corsi. I mean, they're like, the shot differentials are still way in their favor.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I had seen like earlier this week. I haven't looked, you know, probably in a couple of days, but it's like, I don't know, just and I feel like, you know, and we'll maybe get into a little bit of a discussion on that later on, but it's just like, I don't know, when you have that going in your favor, like, I'm not saying that automatically makes it easy for your goalie. I mean, I think the Penguins have kind of tested that model a lot, being for the last, I don't know, for a long time, outside of maybe the Mike Johnston days, the few that they were, you know, I think the Penguins have long been a little bit of a high risk kind of team that, yes, they are able to launch a lot of shots at their opposition, but they can also give up a lot of shots. I think that's something that we've seen with this team to this point so far. You know, but nonetheless, it's like, if you're, you know, if your team is playing with the puck in the other team's zone, then you should be doing better than an 882 save percentage.
Yeah, that's, I mean, and that's what it comes down to. I mean, what it comes down to is that they're just not getting it done, like, in the goaltending position. I'm just looking for these, and like, I mean, they're not off the charts in terms of, like, any of those metrics, but they're a positive possession team in Corsi, Fenwick, and in shots. Like,
yeah,
all of them, they're above 50%.
Wow.
yeah. And so, yeah. I mean, that just tells you that, and it's not that they're giving up some obscene amount of shots. You know what I mean? Like,
I was looking at like some of those advanced goalie metrics, like looking at high danger, save percentage and stuff like that again. And they're not particularly, I mean, they're just really middle of the pack. I mean, nothing one way or the other that, you know, screams like, oh, you know, they're not doing a good job kind of defending in their own zone or suppressing shots. It's like, I don't know, just not getting saves. I mean, it's as simple as it comes.
Wow. They're just, sorry, I'm just looking at some of these other Corsi percentages around the league, and there's some shockingly low Corsi percentages around the league.
Well, there are. I think one of my favorite ones, and I originally was thinking about putting this on the list of things to talk about for today, but I think the one that impresses me the most has to be Columbus.
And that's exactly what I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, they have a positive 13 goal differential at this point in the season. Although they are out of the playoffs still, which I think tells you all you need to know about that team. But I think their score adjusted is like second worst in the league. Like they're not a good possession team by any stretch. They've just had two recent games where they scored 10 goals, and then their last game they scored 8 goals. And you know, that'll do a lot for your goal differential, but
right. I don't know. Well, they beat Montreal 10-0.
Yeah. I don't know, a game where Montreal had already gotten out to a 9-0-1 start to the season, you know, and they were playing the next night, so they didn't want to use Carey Price, so they just let Al Montoya hang out there for the entire game.
That's,
poor guy.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. So
just for the record, this tells you where Columbus has been. They're a -3 on the goal differential. I'm just sorry. I'm just fascinated by this, about how lopsided this is. And I'm looking at this here, and they've had, where is it? Where's my shots on goal here? It was like 6. I think their shots on goal were like 570, and their, like, the shots against them were like 630 or something outrageous like that.
Wow.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was, and it's only through like 13 games as well.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's a lot of rubber getting through.
Yeah. Sorry. I wish I could. I'm looking at too many stats right now. But, like, okay, here's the point. Not to go off on too much of a tangent about how bad Columbus is going to be. But, wow, they are just – they are just not – they're just getting shelled, like, night in and night out. They're just getting absolutely shelled.
Yeah, I'll just say enjoy it for now, Columbus fans. You know, I hope for your team. I really do. I hope that they'll figure it out at some point. But, I mean, you know, this is luck. Pure, unadulterated luck.
Well, let me tell you, what would you wager Columbus's PDO is right now?
103.5.
So close. It's actually just at 100, which tells you that their team shooting percentage is not great.
Yeah.
Because their goaltending has been getting it done for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, so back to things that are not ridiculous stat rabbit trails.
Yes.
But our stats nonetheless. I want to talk about Mike Sullivan's comments earlier today, specifically regarding scoring chances and shots on goal. So did you see this, and what do you make of it?
I did see it, and I think it's really interesting. So it was, well, the article that I kind of referenced was written by Bill West from the Trib. Bill West, a proud Chartres Valley graduate, just like Mike and I.
Perfect.
I think he was maybe the one who originally posed the question to him, or if it was just a talking point that Sullivan was going to bring up anyway. But basically, last week we referenced the fact that the Penguins have been a negative Corsi team to this point in the season. That basically they're allowing more shot attempts, whether they hit the net or get blocked or whatever the case may be. They're allowing more of them than they are taking, which normally we like to see it the other way around because it's indicative of good possession play. But what Sullivan was kind of talking about is that they're not so concerned about actual shot attempts or shots on goal, which the Pens have also kind of been faring a little worse than usual so far this year. But so his point of contention is that they have been looking at goal or like scoring chances. And now, I think it's important to clarify that what he's saying is a scoring chance is probably not what like the NHL would record as a standard scoring chance. There was a kind of a different article, a different perspective. I think it was written by Seth Rohrbaugh from DK on Pittsburgh Sports. And he had talked with Matt Murray, and Matt Murray was talking about how the Penguins as a team were averaging 20 of these scoring chances in a game and allowing far fewer. Whereas, kind of, again, going back to our discussion of last week, you know, the kind of conventional scoring chance metrics that the NHL tracks, the Pens were only scoring or recording about 10 of those per game and allowing about 9 per game. So clearly this is a little bit of a different kind of criteria. But I think it gets into an interesting discussion of how teams actually use advanced stats metrics. And I think one of the ways that we're seeing that is that they're considering a lot of other factors that maybe don't go into the same kind of consideration as, you know, as what the NHL at large distributes. And so I think one of the interesting kind of examples is just like one of the things that Sullivan really points out is that it depends on the player. I'll read this quote here real quick. There are certain players, for example, depending on where the shot is taken on the rink, that some people may not consider it a scoring chance. Like if it's an off-angle shot, Sullivan said. But there are some players in the league that can score from those areas of the rink. There are not that many of them, but there are a few. And I think that kind of stuff needs to be taken into consideration. And, you know, I think that's Sidney Crosby right there. I mean, not sure. Not just like the one, like, ridiculous behind the net goal that he scored off the back of Martin Jones' skate, but also like some of the shots that he's taken at just unbelievable angles so far.
Well, he scored 2 goals, one this season, one last season against Steve Mason, basically from the goal line.
Yeah,
like just sneaking it through the top hand short side.
Yeah, Mason, who's kind of an abnormal goalie in that he actually, I guess you would say he plays goalie left-handed because he grabs his stick with his left hand and catches with his right, as opposed to most goalies who hold the stick with their right and grab with their left.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of just opens up this thing where a left-handed shooter can go right down to the goal line and he still has this big opening on his blocker side. And Sid is, you know, as Mike said, has scored twice there, like in the past 2 years. And like, that's, I think, kind of what we're getting at. And I just think it's a really interesting kind of way to view stats, and also just kind of shows the limitations that we as mere commentators are kind of faced with when we can't really compare apples to apples with the actual NHL squad.
Well, and I think here's what it comes down to, man. The proof is in the pudding, right? Like, at the end of the day, like, you can say that you value hits and record them however you want, but like, if they don't contribute to you winning a game of hockey, does it matter? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can record everything that you want, but unless it actually is indicative of the way that you want to play the game, it doesn't matter at all.
No.
So here's my point. Like, I think one of the things that we've seen out of Mike Sullivan in the not even a full year that he's been coaching the Pens is that he's come in with a very specific game plan that says, when we want to play the right way, this is exactly what it looks like. It looks like X, Y, and Z. And he's going to, like, it, to me, it, like, it just makes sense. I mean, I do, like, there's some really cool, there's a book that I read, actually, like, specifically for work, called The Four Disciplines of Execution. And I wouldn't be surprised if Mike Sullivan has read it, because basically the point is that this guy is making, it's actually a really good book. I'd recommend it to anybody that works for any organization. But the point is that most of the time, whether it's in business or a nonprofit or whatever the case is, that leaders of those organizations don't have like a strategy breakdown. Like, they have a very clear vision for what they want to do, and they know what they want to do to accomplish it. But they don't, they don't break down in the strategy, they break down in the execution of that strategy. And so he gives away a couple different, like, these are the things that we want to see. Like, here's how to implement a better execution kind of idea. And one of the things that he talks about is the difference between lead measures and lag measures. And so he talks, this guy, Stephen Covey is his name. Covey talks about that most people only, like, when they talk about success, they're only using lag measures, which a lag measure is something that only is quantified after the results of your performance are in, which are helpful sometimes. So, like, for example, a lag measure in hockey, depending on how you define it, could be the amount of goals that you score, because you could be doing all the right, quote unquote, right things on the ice, but, like, maybe you face a hot goaltender and it just doesn't go in for you that night. Or maybe you keep missing the net and you just got to go get back on the practice ice. There are lots of reasons that just the amount of goals that you're scoring aren't necessarily the best indicator of your on-ice performance. So what he advocates for is finding out different lead measures, which are predictors that help determine lag measures. Now, not always. Like, there are certain things that, just because you do this one thing does not necessarily mean that you're going to find out this result. But with that said, generally speaking, if we do this, we can find out that there's a pretty good correlation that is going to impact this lag measure, you know, down the road. And so the way, if we're going to apply that to hockey, the way that we kind of talk about it is with Corsi as opposed to wins. So wins are a lag measure because, as we said, you can play a really good game and just get beat by a hot goaltender, i.e. Yaroslav Halak on the entirety of the Eastern Conference a couple of years ago, right?
Yes.
And so the better thing to focus on is to focus on what are the lead measures that we can improve upon, because we believe that if we execute on those things, that it's going to give us a higher chance to win hockey games. Which is, I mean, this is starting to sound exactly like Mike Sullivan, right? We got to play the right way, and we believe that the results are going to follow. I mean, you forget that his first four games as a head coach, where he went 1-3, right?
Yeah, so, and I think he needed, like, overtime or a shootout to get that one win.
Right, exactly. But anybody that watched those games will tell you that the Penguins were a night and day different team in those four games.
Yeah.
You could just see that they were playing, even though the pucks weren't going in the net, they were playing a better game. They were playing with more life, more energy, more passion, all of that stuff that you hear Mike Sullivan talk about. And so I think this is maybe where we're seeing Mike Sullivan tip his hand here is a little bit of kind of, again, to use some of that lead versus lag measure. He's saying, listen, if we generate more scoring chances than the other team, chances are going to be good that we're going to score more goals and we're going to win more games, right? So not just – and I think – to me, I noticed this the most when they played in L.A. this year. So I saw L.A. throwing literally everything they could at the net, just whether it was, you know, with a 20-degree angle from the half wall or anything, just center ice, they're driving pucks in the net or in towards the net. And, like, all of those things count as, like, Corsi 4, right? And so you're looking at, okay, well, maybe, like – when I think about the Kings, I don't think about guys that have a whole ton of top-end talent and finesse. You have a lot of good, really talented hockey players, but you're not going to see, like, Anze Kopitar go in and dangle around, you know, half of an opposing team and roof a backhand like it was somebody's slap shot. You're just not going to see that. You see them get it done as a team and just literally overwhelm their opponent with volume of shots, physical play, in possession in that way. And that works for them. But I think what we're seeing with Mike Sullivan here is him saying, listen, the thing that I really care about is making sure that we outchance the opponents. Because we believe that if we outchance them, we have the talent on this roster up and down to finish those chances and win hockey games. And honestly, over the past 10 games, he's been spot on.
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, I was looking through the Bill West article. And, I mean, they're ranked second in the league in scoring chances for at 56%, almost 56% of the high danger chances for.
Yeah.
That's a lot. Like,
oh, that's very, yeah.
and over the course of a game, if you're generating, even if you're generating, you know, like 10 high quality scoring chances, if you're going to say, like, hey, you know, most nights we're going to generate 6 of those 10, I'll take that. Why? Mm-hmm. Because of Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Patrick Hornquist, and Phil Kessel, and Chris Letang, and, you know, on and on and on and on. Because the likelihood that those guys finish those chances is way higher than the likelihood of, you know, Jason Zucker doing it night in and night out. And that's no knock on that guy. It's just that's the way that the Pens are built. So to me, I think this is a really intriguing piece and thought that says – maybe we're starting to see a little bit more of what Sullivan is actually preaching at these guys. It has nothing to do with shot volume and everything to do with, you know, really like finessed execution.
Yeah. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head and, you know, kind of comparing the Kings as just this kind of, you know, big, I mean, and I don't want to call them talentless by any stretch, but they're, you know, they're a big team that gets by on its, on their size basically. You know, whereas the Penguins certainly are very much a skill team. I think it kind of even draws a little bit of an interesting comparison back to, you know, the kind of halcyon days of like the Golden Triangle line in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. like in the early to mid 90s with, you know, with literally like three of the NHL's top 10 scorers all time playing on the same line with Lemieux, Jágr, and Francis all on the same line. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's just like that was a team that they didn't need a lot of shots on goal. You know, we can't really necessarily track what their like Corsi would have been, you know, just because it wasn't something that was being tracked at the time. You know, but nonetheless, you know, that was a team that could still score 5 or 6 goals any night, you know, and they could do it on 20 shots.
Yeah.
As, you know, on net, as opposed to a team like, you know, the kind of current modern day LA Kings who just, you know, as you say, just absolutely just pummel the puck at the net, knowing that they don't necessarily have that sort of, you know, like untouchable kind of skill trait, maybe, that other teams do. And I think that's, you know, a little bit of a situation that we're seeing with these Penguins. And I think it's kind of an innovative strategy for Sullivan that he's kind of saying, you know, I'm going to accommodate what this team is capable of. You know, certainly, again, a lot of the time when Sid is just carrying the puck in the attacking zone, you know, he doesn't have to necessarily be shooting because, like, his presence there is just commanding other people to move towards him and pull teams out of their normal defensive posture, you know, and then that allows, you know, a Patrick Hornquist, or if it's a power play, it allows a Phil Kessel or a Malkin or whomever to, you know, to have an, you know, a kind of unchecked look at the net. And then you only need one shot, one scoring chance, you know, to make a goal, basically, which is something that not every team can do in equal measures. I mean, I guess the kind of counter to that is that, and, you know, and I certainly don't want to confuse correlation for causation, but over the years, basically in the post-lockout era, teams that do well with shot attempts tend to do very well in the postseason. And right. I think it, you know, I think it speaks to the nature of the postseason where, you know, no matter who you play, you're probably playing a good team with, you know, with good back checking forwards. And, you know, I think the game becomes a little bit more defensively postured. And sometimes just that willingness to just get the puck on net and just crash for goals, even if it's like your skill lines, is just so important in the playoffs. You know, but at the same time, I think it's really interesting to see that we've kind of found a little bit of a separate layer of abstraction that works for this Penguins team. And it, I guess there is a little bit of a question or a concern, like, okay, so, I mean, you know, by no means, I think, is Sullivan, like, dismissing Corsi or, you know, shot attempts for or shots on goal. You know, I think, in a sense, it's still a building block to developing these good-looking scoring chances that he's talking about. But at the same time, it's kind of like, well, we don't like what we're seeing in terms of shot attempts, so we're going to look at a higher level function and say, oh, well, we're doing really good with our scoring chances. You know, and I think that if you are overly kind of, I don't know, pessimistic or you aren't totally swayed by that choice, it's like, well, you know, what's to stop a team from saying, well, you know, we value hits as a, you know, as a preceder to winning games, so look at all these hits that we're throwing. I mean, never mind that means that they probably didn't have the puck, you know, which leads to a whole different bevy of challenges. But, you know, but I think it's just interesting to see that essentially Sullivan is evolving. You know, I think that's the most important way to look at it. Or perhaps more realistically, he's just more fully implementing his system now than he ever got a chance to do last year.
So I think you're right. What I'm looking at right now, and I think this is just this really, really interesting. Over the past 2 years, I'm looking at a comparison between the Kings and Pittsburgh. Okay? And mm-hmm. Just over the past two seasons, and looking specifically at the Corsi 4 numbers, so number of shot attempts 4, or shots generated 4, and then looking at how that translates to shots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I think this is really interesting. So, LA, over the past two seasons, has generated 4,850 shots.
Okay.
The Penguins have generated 4,478 shots.
Okay. So, I mean, okay.
So, I mean, just under 400 more mm-hmm. shots generated than the Penguins.
Yeah.
Which so is significant.
That's 10% difference.
Yeah. That's a pretty significant stat. Now, here's where it gets really interesting, though. And when you compare that to the shots for numbers,
mm-hmm.
LA, 2,459, Pittsburgh, 2,506. So, wow. The percentage of shots that the Penguins have actually landed on net is far higher than LA.
Uh-huh.
So when you start talking about what type of shots is LA generating, I don't know that, like, the Corsi 4 percentage that we're, or the Corsi 4 that we're looking at is necessarily always going to be as indicative as it could be elsewhere. It just, I mean, these are just very, very different teams when you look at it that way. To say that, you know, you've got, I mean, I don't necessarily can't do the quick math in my head, but like 24 out of 48 is about 50% as opposed to 25 out of 44.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be it'd be closer to 60% anyway.
Right. And so what you're seeing then is that just like, and in terms of goals, like, let me, still looking here. Of course I didn't look at the goals.
Yeah. Well,
but I think my point is
a true statistician would say that the goals don't matter.
Well, that's because I'm a true statistician, of course.
And, yeah. And secondary assists are just noise. Of course.
Right. Well,
that's okay. I will say that's a bridge too far for me. It's like, you know, I think, I don't know. I understand that it's kind of trivial that the NHL does track second assists. I mean, there's like basically no other sport, organized sport, that does that. You know, the NBA only tracks primaries, soccer only tracks primaries, etc. But I don't know. I mean, baseball only tracks primaries. You know, but at a certain level, it's like, yeah, but that's because the puck, or like, you know, the movement typically isn't as fast in those other sports. Or, you know, kind of the guy, you know, the guy that can be like the third to last person to touch the puck can really, or fourth to last person can still be the one who actually makes a play go. I would say.
Well, I mean, how many times have we seen Chris Letang like make a beautiful pass up ice that eventually leads to a goal and he gets zero credit for it?
Yeah. So no, you're absolutely right.
Okay. So, wow. Sorry, I'm just like, I'm just looking at, yeah, there's just lots of fun things that I'm looking at.
That's always true.
Oh, that's, okay. Well, let me put it to you this way. So last year, I'm looking at it because the current report that I'm looking at includes the playoffs from last year. Mm-hmm. So the Penguins played 18 more games than the LA, and yeah, only had 600 more shots.
Yeah.
I mean,
so that would be, well, yeah. I mean, so that would break down to, well, I mean, that's more than 30 shots a game though.
Well, right. But my point in saying that, or I'm sorry, that's Corsi, not shots. That's Corsi.
Yeah.
In terms of shots, you know, we're looking at, we're getting too far into the weeds. This is like the we need to go back and do some more research into this. But
yeah,
it's fantastic. I think it's a phenomenally interesting look at how different stats are being tracked and like how different teams are actually looking at on paper. All that is to say, what's your summary on this West article and like what it does for Sullivan? Is it just a case of him just counting what he wants to so he can feel better? Or is there some legitimacy to this?
Well, you know, I would say maybe if the team weren't winning, I would be alarmed. But, I mean, honestly, you know, once again, it's like, you don't, like, it, you know, if you have the talent that the Penguins have, you probably don't need to take the greatest percentage of shots. I mean, I am definitely a volume proponent, you know, and I think you would probably ascribe to that as well. And to that extent, I think Sullivan is as well. I mean, I think he's saying that he wants lots of, you know, these scoring chances as the team categorizes them. You know, he's not saying, oh, we want five good scoring chances in a game. He's saying we want lots of good scoring chances in a game. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's an important thing. You know, it's just, once again, it's just kind of what level of abstraction you're comfortable with using. And again, if you can, you know, boast a top power play with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, Phil Kessel, and Patrick Hornquist on it, like, you ought to be scoring on the chances that you get. And, you know, once again, the team has been doing that. So,
yeah,
you know, I think it's an interesting perspective, and I would love to just learn more about specifically what Sullivan is kind of getting at, or how these, you know, chances are categorized. I mean, I think it, to a certain extent, I think it even gets into, you know, we spent a good amount of time last week talking about expected goals for and against. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think to me, it's, I almost think that his, what he's getting on about is not that different from that. Like, they're considering a variety of factors, you know, player handedness, game situation, game score, you know, location of the shot. You know, there's nothing wrong with wanting to consider more variables in determining what, you know, in determining if you're getting good looks at the net or not. You know, I think we use Corsi and just kind of, you know, a very broad-based counting stat because it's what we who don't have millions of dollars to invest in, you know, in kind of video study and other things, it's what's available to us.
Sure. Well, let me put it to you this way here. I'll make a simple analogy, I think, to kind of summarize how I feel about it.
Okay.
So if you're Barry Trotz and you have Alex Ovechkin and you know that he's good for about 15 goals every year from the right circle on the power play with a slapper,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you just know that he's good for that.
Yeah.
And you go into a game where the Capitals get on the power play and they have, we'll say the league average, what, like three or four opportunities on the power play?
Yeah.
We'll say three. And you know that Alex Ovechkin got exactly one shot from the right circle.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy with that?
No.
No. Is that a very incredibly nuanced stat that says, that's like, well, is the number of times that one player can get a very specific shot off, is that really going to contribute to our game?
I mean, I think it very much can be.
Well, and that's, I think that's the point, is that if Sullivan is looking at it and saying, like, we want to get these type of shots for our players because we know that if they get these type of shots in these areas, that the likelihood that they score is, like, above 50%, well,
yeah.
I want to track that.
Like, yeah, no,
because
absolutely.
That's an indication of how much they're actually playing and executing the strategy of their hockey club.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it comes down to. And I think we don't need to, like, I don't think it's a case of him just, like, rewriting or doing, like, the revisionist history of, like, hockey games to make himself feel better. Like, I think it's him saying, we want to get a certain type of shots, and when we can get that, we see on-ice success. So yep. Let's track it. And if we didn't see it, why did we not see it? Right?
Exactly.
Like,
right.
It just makes sense to do it that way.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, I mean, to kind of use maybe a Penguin example, it's like, you know, if Sid's not getting five or six looks at the net from, you know, let's say within 18 inches of the net, I would argue that the Pens probably didn't do as well in that game.
Right.
Because we just know that that's where his offense normally comes from. Whether he's actually shooting it or if he's passing, like, he has to be working, you know, Sid down low is a thing for a reason.
Right. Yeah.
You know, in the same way that, you know, if Malkin's not cracking some one timers from the right half wall, chances are good the power play is not performing well.
Right. Right. And it's because they're, yeah, we can go back into that discussion for, I feel like, hours.
Yeah.
But
yeah, no, I mean, I think that's actually what I'm getting at. You know, I think I'm trying to kind of question my way through a little bit of what Sullivan had said in this article. You know, I think we both are, but I think ultimately we've come to this realization that, yeah, this is a really smart guy doing a really smart thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's kind of what I've come to expect from Mike Sullivan.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Mike.
Yeah.
And this might be a bit of a broad-based statement, but I've seen people already start to mention it. How long before we recognize Sullivan as, like, the Pens' best coach ever?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I think it depends. It depends. I mean, because we were talking about,
yeah, I mean, we talked
same
about
kind of thing with Disco, right?
Oh, like, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, when he takes the team to back-to-back, you know, Stanley Cup championships, like, Disco's the best coach in the world. Like, there's nobody that can rival him, you know.
But I do feel like there was, you know, I would say personally, like, even by his second or third year, just, like, mindlessly hearing the same, get to our game, we didn't get to our game, you know, kind of repeat answers. I started to maybe think, you know, I think his system is fine, but, like, where's the flexibility? Whereas, like, I mean, I don't know. Every time I hear something from Sullivan, I get more impressed, I feel.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I really like Mike Sullivan. I think he is a stupid talented coach is what it comes down to. I think, and it's because he understands how the game works and isn't afraid to really go after the things that he needs to go after, right? Like, it's, he's not interested in just paying lip service to the fans or to whomever. He's like, this is what's going to win hockey games, and so that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah. No, for sure.
And it, so I love that about him. Mm-hmm. I think the reality is that he's going to have to do a lot. Like, if he repeats as, like, you know, if the Pens win a Stanley Cup back-to-back, I think then the conversation starts. Right now you're going to kind of hear the rumblings of it, mm-hmm. By some people that are just looking to generate website views.
Right. And, you know, God bless them for that, I guess.
Yeah. I think.
Go ahead.
My point is I think it's a little bit too soon to start having that conversation.
No.
Not because I don't think he's that good, but because for to have that type of. I mean, he, like, to be. You have to at least hit the same plateau of back-to-back championships, because that's what Lemieux did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because if we're going to make that parallel, like, you have to hit back-to-back before we can even start that conversation.
No, I agree. I think, I mean, if even if not back-to-back, just he's got to get a second. I think if he gets a second, I think there will be basically no argument, because none of the other coaches in Penn's history have been able to do two.
Right.
You know, but at the same time, or I mean, like, even if, you know, maybe even if he gets, you know, to another Stanley Cup final, even if by some chance he doesn't win it, you know, I think we could talk about it more then, but I do think it's a little early now. I mean, given that he still hasn't coached a full season.
Right. I mean, he hasn't even coached a full year, like calendar year.
No, not at all.
But I mean, I'll say this. I think he's on the right trajectory. Put it to you that way.
Yeah, for sure. It's exciting times.
It is. I mean, I'll be honest with you, like, I get excited when the Pens play. Just, yeah. And that was, you know, I don't ever want to take it for granted that I get excited when the hockey team that I really like has a game. Because I'll tell you what, man, if I'm like Columbus, if I'm a Columbus fan, I'm having a hard time getting excited about that team.
Yeah, I mean, it's the challenge they've faced all, you know, all along, I think, is just they haven't been able to put a competitive enough team on the ice often enough that, you know, that therefore it leads to lower attendance, which leads to reduced payroll, which, you know, it's a kind of vicious circle, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I think with all that said, like, as long as Mike Sullivan is going to be the coach, I think we're going to see exciting hockey.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's just a great feeling, I would say, you know, because I mean, I think there's certainly other teams. I mean, I don't know, even look at Detroit in recent years where it's like, you know, they're still good, but like, they're not, I mean, this probably isn't a championship caliber team. And like, they're just kind of relying on this just kind of, I don't know, kind of boring brand of hockey where like, they're neither that offensively dynamic, but they also, you know, they don't tend to make things exciting enough in their defensive zone. And, you know, I think that's a kind of ugly place to be at.
Yeah.
You know, and that's certainly not what we get to face on a nightly basis.
Well, in that sense, like, I'm just very grateful for it.
Yeah.
So.
For sure.
So let me put it to you this way, man. I actually have some things to get to for the rest of the evening.
Mm-hmm.
So my time is drawing to an end here. So. Yeah. We had maybe planned to talk about the fact that Arizona is picking up a new arena.
Yeah. Which, I mean, I guess
good for them, like,
yeah. Yeah. In 30 seconds, good for them. You know, I think they needed a new arena, and it's nice that it's going to be a lot closer to Phoenix. So, you know, and they're going to share it with Arizona State in that illustrious Division I hockey program, which I still kind of can't believe, but, you know, but hey, good for them. They deserved it. I hope it works out for them. You know, I mean, I think that probably obviously commits the team for a much longer period of time, since it's basically going to be their arena.
Right.
You know, so there's not really any way of them escaping to Seattle or Quebec or wherever in the near future. So.
Well, there it is.
Yeah.
So, well, I'll ask you this, man, any closing thoughts for the podcast?
Not really. This is it's a good, I don't know. I'm just ready for the Pens to play again. It has been like, what, 4 days now? And
yeah,
I'm just kind of getting restless. Need something else to talk about, to observe or whatever. But
I like it. Cool, man. Well, listen, that's good for me. And again, we on behalf of Andrew, just want to say thank you for listening and tuning in. We asked it if you are excited about this, one, share this with some friends who maybe are looking to get into hockey, and hopefully we can convince them to do so. And two, just let's go Pens. Am I right?
That's it. Go Pens.
Okay, go Pens, eh? Right on. Well, this has been another episode of the Reggie's House podcast. We thank you for listening, and we hope to see you again, same time, same place, next week. See ya.
Bye.